Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
And we are rolling on a Friday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. He is Paul Gallant. Thank you so much for joining us. On Paul's thing that he talked about in the last segment, which was spending a lot of money on not a lot of food on one of his many, many, many dates that he goes on.
So judgmental. I'm sorry. I'm exploring my options.
You are.
Life is an adventure.
5847 says, went to Nobu Sushi with some friends. 12-course dinner, all little bites. It was $300. Cool experience, but had to snag some Taco Bell after. I respect the heck out of that.
Yeah, Nobu especially. I went to the Nobu in Malibu, and same thing. It's a great experience. You're outside. You're on the water. Yeah. It's amazing, but it's a lot. And you're not getting that much, and I'm still hungry afterwards. So,
yeah, if I go somewhere like there, just know that I'm definitely not the one paying for it.
It's very MLB, sexist.
MLB
what about equality?
Owners, yeah, well, I'm all about equality until the check comes.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, at least you're honest about it, okay?
Well, here's the thing. I always offer to pay. The thing that I will never be for equality on is if there's a draft for the war. I ain't going to Ukraine.
Oh. Well, why not? I mean, you
send them in.
You seem tougher than me, you know?
Well, you specifically, I'm glad you can acknowledge that. I would definitely get would end a war before you would.
If I go there, it'll be like me and Jackson Mahomes, and we'll make TikTok videos, and we'll stop those dirty Russian commies in their tracks.
Paul shows up to Ukraine in a Hawaiian shirt. Yeah. Like, guys, can we just get this over with?
I'm just going to river dance in front of them. And they're going to be like, what the hell is going on? And instead of killing me, they're going to be like, let's just turn around. It's too much. Do we really want to rule over a country with clowns like this? I don't know about that.
Oh, God. Well, MLB, still no conclusion.
No.
Not a lot happening. And according to Evan Drellick, who does great work for The Athletic, he said sources, Angels, Diamondbacks, Reds, and Tigers owners opposed MLB luxury tax increase to $220 million. MLB also proposed including player meal money in calculation of luxury tax, which irked players. That is according to Evan Drellick.
Yeah, it would irk me too. Hey, you're only going to get bologna sandwiches now, and that's going to count against the luxury tax. You know, if you want higher quality deli meat, if you want roast beef, even more against the luxury tax. This is nuts. I mean, you would assume that if you are a baseball team, that, Vanessa, you want to give your players the best possible nutrition. Like, from the bottom levels to the top.
It's a great point.
And this is like a small little petty thing that I would totally understand why players would get pissed off about it and how it would actually sidetrack negotiations as opposed to making things better. And that's a middle finger. That is not a good faith move by the owners if they include that as part of the luxury tax.
I like, and you liked this too, that Evan Drellick is listing teams. Because what we get with the NFL, we at least get specific names of who is opposed to what rule change. Like, it's always very specific. Like, the owner of the Giants were against this and were all about, like, they think taunting is the worst thing in the world. Jerry Jones is for X, Y, and Z. With MLB, so often it's like all of the owners are grouped into like one group of people. So I like that Evan Drellick gave us specifics of who wanted these very petty and greedy and cheap things to pass.
What I don't get is that one of the owners that is about this life, that is about not actually, you know, going over the luxury tax, is a team that has 4 players making over $20 million a year. That is the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, of California, of the United States of America, of North America, formerly of Pangea, of planet Earth. I don't know why they call themselves the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. It annoys me.
It's dumb.
4 players are making $21 million plus. Noah Syndergaard, Justin Upton, Anthony Rendon, Mike Trout. They also are paying Shohei Ohtani, and I'm assuming that whenever Shohei Ohtani's contract gets to the point where they're giving him a long-term deal, that they will also give him a stupid amount of money. And Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, who is worth nearly $4 billion, is one of the people who was actually voting against increasing the luxury tax, which would clearly help him out, which would clearly help him win more. So this guy doesn't care about winning. And that's surprising to me. The Angels do actually make a good amount of money on an annual basis, considering they're in the same market as the Dodgers, which is surprising because that's not the case for every single team that's like in a two-market city. I would say the White Sox compared to the Cubs, it's a totally different kind of dichotomy. Yankees and Mets, it's different. It's definitely both of those teams have a diehard fan base and make a ton of money. But in this situation, you would think that someone like Artie Moreno would be pushing to increase the luxury tax. That would help. The rich owners should be helping this out. Don't they want this product to get back on the field? And they want to decrease it. I don't like it.
According to Evan Drellick, industry sources are not confident that the season will start by April. Bob Nightingale adding, we are on MLB lockout day number 93. There is no scheduled negotiating session today. They could still communicate by phone, of course, but nothing planned after their 90-minute meeting on Thursday. Again, that's according to Bob Nightingale. This is frustrating because it's like all of these people make so much money. Yeah. It is their job to get this resolved, and they are just deciding not to do their job.
Yeah, it's infuriating. Why aren't you meeting today? Why aren't you meeting tomorrow? Why aren't you meeting in one of the next couple of days? What is it that is so pressing right now that you have to do? I can't think of anything. And especially when you took 90 days off to meet for what? 2 days and then get actually nowhere in those 2 days. What are you doing? That's all I want to know. How about you guys give me a log of your day-to-day activities, owners and players, and then I can maybe feel a little bit better. But for the most part, I know, okay, you're just going to go back and assume that things are going to change. Nothing will change unless you guys are in person, period. End of story. It's not going to happen if you guys are away from each other.
It's been frustrating for sure, and it's something that, you know, I think fans seem to be really, really getting fed up with just because of the greed aspect of it. Jesse Rogers, who does really great work for ESPN, he breaks a lot of stories. He's had boots on the ground from the get-go of this situation. He joined the Wheelhouse yesterday, which you can hear from 3 to 7 every day on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. And this is interesting because Jesse Rogers' report, or what he told the Wheelhouse, is way different than what Evan Drellick and Bob Nightingale are saying. Nightingale and Drellick are saying that a deal is not imminent. But here's what Jesse Rogers had to say.
I'd say the sweet spot for a deal is like March 7th to the 15th. I think 7th would be the earliest, like after the weekend, and the 15th would be the latest in my world. Wow. I could be wrong. It could be April 15th. But I think that there's a chance that something happens in the next 12 days.
I need something concrete as far as why the chance, Vanessa, exists in the next 12 days. If they're not meeting now, and they're not meeting the day after, or the day after, or the day after that, then what is going to create this, you know? A realization that they look like a bunch of rich jackasses as a country is getting invaded. It's been like the constant center of attention. You know, like, what are they all of a sudden just going to say, like, well, damn, Ukraine's getting invaded. We look like bastards right now. Because they look, like, insert the words. They just look stubborn and tone deaf. So what's going to change? That's why I don't buy what Jesse Rogers is saying. I hope he's right, though. I just don't buy it.
Yeah, no, me too. Meanwhile, Adam Schefter tweeting something that will definitely be of interest to the many Cowboys fans that live in Houston. Cowboys are likely to release wide receiver Amari Cooper by the start of the new league year, per league sources. Cooper is due $20 million in fully guaranteed money on the fifth day of the new league year, which is March 20th. At this point with the Cowboys, they haven't been America's team for a while, in my opinion, certainly not as far as success goes. I know the brand is what it is, but at this point, they're like pumping out broadcasters with Hall of Fame broadcasting careers more than they're pumping out actually good players.
Are you annoyed? Are you annoyed by that dynamic of all the ex-Cowboy players that are broadcasters?
To me, it's just like the Cowboy brand is so strong, and I don't fault Troy Aikman or Tony Romo for building on that. Actually, I credit both of them because they are, they're critical of the Cowboys in a way that I think a lot of broadcasters wouldn't be.
Their fan base is an interesting group because I think the ones that are actually from the greater Dallas area are pretty miserable and kind of realize how things have changed. But the ones who don't live there, whether they live here or they live in the Northeast or somewhere else, like still think it's like 1995. And
right.
It's surprising to see them that way. As far as Amari Cooper being released, they really put themselves in a bind with some of those big contracts that they gave out. And I think if you were really going to be honest with them, they would want to cut Ezekiel Elliott right now. Ezekiel Elliott last season, ask any Cowboy fan, they'll tell you that Tony Pollard was a better running back. And
yeah.
Elliott's cap hit this coming season per Spotrac is $18.2 million. But if they cut him, they actually don't save anything because his dead cap number is $30.08 million. So after this coming season, they can get rid of him. I think ultimately, if they could pick between Cooper and Elliott, they would probably pick keeping Cooper. But they're going to have to, the next 2 years, I would imagine, cut both of these players. I get it with Cooper, where you have CeeDee Lamb and you have Michael Gallup, who they really like. But I am looking at the Cowboys right now, and I'm all of a sudden wondering, like, how is Mike McCarthy going to be able to keep his job this coming season when, on paper, everything looks really good, but financially, man, a lot of those pieces are not looking like they're going to be long for that team.
Yeah, a lot of Cowboys fans probably wondering about the decision to keep Zeke over Amari Cooper. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, we're talking about the Texans meeting with one of the top prospects and how he compared himself to a former franchise player. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
And we are live on this Friday as we put a bow on what has been a very fun week. Pauly G at Gallant Says on Twitter, holding it down in studio. I'm in Indianapolis for the combine, had boots on the ground, going to the press conferences and making some contacts. It's been a lot of fun. Lance Zierlein is here as well, rocking it out. So the Texans actually have a high draft pick this year, which is something we'll see what they do with it. They recently interviewed Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon. This is according to Brooks Kabina of the Houston Chronicle. Brooks wrote about an hour ago, Oregon defensive end Kayvon Thibodeau met with the Texans today and said, quote, "I'd love to be in Houston. I'd love to play in that Lovie Smith system." Thibodeau pointed to Jadeveon Clowney in the franchise's history of pass rushers and says he's a build off him, saying, quote, "I'm like Jadeveon 2.0. I don't hate this. I think that people are really, really hard on Jadeveon and maybe don't quite understand the things that he had. You know, they're not taking into account the things that he had to deal with injury and whatnot. But here's the full quote. We have not read this on air yet. Let's see. "I'm like Jadeveon 2.0, right? Where I have a lot of skills and I have the hunger to keep going. I'm going to steal pass rush moves. If I see a good pass rush move out there, I'm going to add it to my toolbox." That is Kayvon Thibodeau.
I hope that he is able to, if the Texans draft him, be a more consistent player than Clowney. I think Clowney got a bad rap for some things that I don't think were necessarily the case. I think some accused him of loafing from time to time. I think that actually came from essentially the Texans coaching staff. It was implied. And it might have happened. I just felt like when Clowney was at his best, he was probably the best run-defending interior player in the league. Because the power and strength that he had to drive offensive linemen off the ball, that is not something you can teach. He was just that powerful and explosive. Definitely called for a lot of offsides. That happened in Seattle. That has happened everywhere that he has gone. Cleveland, I saw it a couple of times last year. Tennessee, too. But this is a guy that, you shouldn't get mad about Thibodeau comparing himself to him. Whether Clowney lived up to your expectations or not, there's no denying that he was an absolute freak of nature athletically, and that you want to have players like that on your team. You want more out of them, but who do the Texans have right now that's like that?
Right. When you're drafted where he was drafted, the expectations are sky high.
Yep.
Sky high. And look, he hasn't, since he's left Houston, had the career that I thought. I mean, I'll tell you, I was wrong. Like, I thought that he was going to add a lot of value wherever he went. And it's not that he hasn't added any value, but it's just not to the level that I thought he would. But I thought that was an interesting comparison. I don't think it's a bad comparison. These guys, you know, before they go into these meetings, these are guys in their early 20s, and their agents and their moms, and I'm sure everybody is telling them, hey,
yeah,
say something that makes the franchise like you and want you, and say something that shows that you've done research. I think that's what he was trying to do. I don't think Texans fans need to overthink it.
Let's go through really quickly. Improv exercise. Number one overall picks, if we feel like they actually have lived up to expectations.
Okay.
So Trevor Lawrence, to this point, I would say no. But it's been
But it's rookie year, I'd say no.
Joe Burrow, 2020. Yes, they're in a Super
Absolutely
Bowl year, too.
Yes.
Kyler Murray.
No.
I think that he has shown some real promising moments, but the most important moments of the season, he has either been banged up for, unavailable for, or perhaps borderline checked out.
Just having a diva attitude.
Yeah. Okay, so you're out on him. I'm going to say I'm in.
Kyler.
I'm in on Kyler, but I think that more people are probably on your side than on mine. 2018, Baker Mayfield. Did he live up to expectations as the number
Absolutely
one overall?
Absolutely not.
No. Definitely
Absolutely not.
And the Browns should not give him an extension. Myles Garrett, yes.
Yes.
Garrett's
no
maybe
question.
The best, outside of Aaron Donald, the best defender in the NFL. And maybe TJ Watt. Jared Goff, 2016. No.
I'm going to say no on that.
Yeah.
I'm probably less anti-Jared Goff than some people, but he definitely has not lived up to, no.
Jameis Winston, no.
No.
Jadeveon Clowney, no.
No.
For the most part, the number one overall pick does not live up to the expectations. So in that list that we just went through, you know, and before that, Eric Fisher, I would also say no on that. It took Fisher a couple of years to get to that point. And then after that, Andrew Luck, I think we would both agree. Andrew Luck and Cam Newton, yes, they delivered. They both were either borderline MVPs in the case of Luck, actual MVP in 2015 in the case of Cam Newton. Longevity-wise for Cam Newton, was he the guy that you wanted to have every single year? No, but for the most part, the number one overall pick does not live up to the expectations. You know, it's just a really difficult thing to do. Clowney was at least, though, a contributing player. He was not, in the case of Jameis Winston, in turnover machine. He was not in the case of Jared Goff, a guy that clearly was pretty limited and only could get 3 points scored in the Super Bowl, or in Baker Mayfield's case, too, a guy who... yeah, he's just there. You know, he's not bad, but he's not good. I would say his career has been something that it's not the worst thing in the world for Thibodeau to make the comparison to. But a lot of people like to hyperbolize and act like Clowney wasn't anything here. And I just think that's unfair.
It's totally unfair. One of the guys that worked with Jadeveon Clowney a lot when he was here was Mike Vrabel, of course. And Mike Vrabel is now coaching Tennessee. And Paul, I think everybody knows how big of a fan you are of the Tennessee Titans and Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I hate that whole state. You know, I hate it all. Their fans.
Nashville's fun.
Sure, Nashville is fun. And, you know, the people of Nashville should stick to enjoying Nashville instead of watching NFL football because they don't know how it works. Ryan Tannehill is clearly very limited as a quarterback. Is he bad? No. I was surprised when Vanessa, yesterday we talked about, hey, who has the worst quarterback situation in the AFC South? I was surprised by the amount of people that did not vote for Tennessee. They said 5%. Because, I mean, Tannehill, like, you know what he is. He's not getting any better. He's probably going to get worse going forward. They have been very defensive of Ryan Tannehill, the Titans, this offseason, to the point where now I don't believe that they're going to even try to make a move to go get a better quarterback. Kind of hard to do it with the Texans, of course, seeing as Deshaun Watson's in division. No way he's getting traded there.
No.
But yesterday it was John Robinson we heard audio of. And today, or excuse me, yesterday also, Mike Vrabel said, Ryan's won too many games for us. He's not the only person out there making mistakes. It will never be about one person because we know how critical the quarterback is to the success of the team. They're defensive about Ryan Tannehill. And, I mean, everyone knows that Ryan Tannehill's the reason that they, as the one seed last year, despite all of those injuries, were not able to win a playoff game.
Ryan Tannehill cannot step up in big moments. He doesn't get it done in big moments. And at least, like, give the Colts credit. You know they're out on Carson Wentz.
Mm-hmm.
they're basically saying that, you know, they went from he's our guy, he's our quarterback, to verbatim, we'll see.
Right.
The Titans, maybe they're being honest too, and maybe they are all in on Tannehill, but I cannot for the love of God see why. You are wasting Derrick Henry's career. You are wasting all of the tools and the pieces and the weapons that you've brought in to support Tannehill for a quarterback situation that, like you said, is I don't see it getting better.
Right. They are living in a memory. They still think that the Tannehill two seasons, which were surprisingly very good. He was an exceptional play-action passer over those two seasons, and the numbers support it. But now this is first year without Arthur Smith, and all of a sudden the interception number goes up, and he looks a lot like Miami Ryan Tannehill. What's the anomaly? Is it the 2 years, or is it Tannehill's entire body of work? It's the 2 years, clearly. And you can convince yourself that, okay, if we don't have Tannehill, we can have something worse. Fine, but you should still be trying to swing to upgrade, because they sacked Joe Burrow 9 times in that game and lost. 9 times. They should have won that game entirely based off of that. And technically, they sacked him 11 times because there were two that got called back and they didn't throw any flags on it because there was like an offsides and a false start that happened.
Well, we started last season by talking about, and by we, I mean the collective public and media, by saying that the Titans could be a Super Bowl caliber team. And I don't see that happening unless they get somebody to upgrade at the quarterback position. All right, coming up as we continue on a Friday, Vanessa and Gallant, we play a game of Are You In or Are You Out? Talk about some Cowboy news and what you would want for the NFL. That's next.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
What would you like for Davis Mills? It's kind of been talked about, what should the Texans draft, who should the Texans draft, and at what point. But you brought up something earlier, Paul, about what you would like for Davis Mills specifically.
I saw Kevin O'Connell, the new head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, talking about how he wants to make Justin Jefferson the Cooper Kupp of the Vikings offense, and that makes so much sense. Jefferson's arguably top five wide receiver. He's been fantastic his first 2 years in the league, even with working with Kirk Cousins. And look, it's not like Kirk Cousins is a bad quarterback, but he's definitely not a great quarterback either. I want the Texans to find a guy that they can turn into that. Maybe Brandon Cooks they still think can be that guy, but if you want Davis Mills to have the best possible chance of telling you who he is as a quarterback and if he has a potential future in this league, then you need to make sure that he is surrounded by some good weapons. And obviously, you got to wait a little bit of time, and it does suck that during free agency, the Texans might not be able to get rid of Deshaun Watson and that cap figure immediately. It does sound like we're going to get a resolution to potentially whether or not Watson's going to face any criminal charges by April 1st. But if he doesn't, then we might have to still wait for that trade to take place and the Texans to figure out, you know, how they'll have cap space at the start of the league year to sign somebody like this. But when I see Amari Cooper's name available, if you really think that Davis Mills is your guy, if you're talking yourself into Davis Mills this offseason, then you should be looking to overpay for the kind of players like that. How would it work? I don't really know. But are you really telling me that Davis Mills is best off with Brandon Cooks? Cool, but who knows if he'll be here. It seems like they're open to trading him. And like Nico Collins or whoever else you have at wide receiver. No, you need to give him as much as you possibly can to, I think, give him a fair shake, both on the offensive line and at wide receiver. So I saw that, Vanessa, and I thought to myself, okay, well, maybe is Amari Cooper someone that they even think about? Cap situation being what it is, probably not now, but I would like to think that they would be looking at guys like this, say somebody that is a highly priced, highly touted wide receiver is available to them later in the offseason.
Adam Schefter tweeting about an hour ago, the Cowboys are likely to release wide receiver Amari Cooper by the start of the new league year, per league sources. Cooper is due $20 million in fully guaranteed money on the fifth day of the new league year, which is March 20th. Yeah, I mean, financially, can the Texans swing it? I'm guessing no, but I love what you're saying about getting Davis Mills a reliable target, because I think Nico Collins can turn out to be a good player. We saw some spurts and we saw some sparks this past season, but Nico Collins is still developing too. So we don't know what Nico Collins is going to be. In order for Davis Mills to have any chance of thriving, not only does he need a weapon like you're talking about, his go-to, he needs protected. I mean, he needs an O-line. He needs to, you know, to not be like one of the most banged up rookies in the NFL. So I think I like what you're saying, and I think that it would be interesting to see who the Texans could swing to try to get him some help.
Yeah. I wonder, though, just given where they are, if they're going to be willing to really spend. Because if you're a team that is where the Texans are right now, you don't really have much of an incentive to spend. You don't expect to really be contending this coming season, no matter what Lovie Smith might be saying. We could be the Bengals. Sure, you could be a lot of things. But are they going to be willing to actually spend money this offseason? I wonder. Last offseason was weird. I mean, they just signed a million free agents, but none of them were expensive. You know, hey, let's get all the scratch-off tickets. Maybe one of these will end up with money. And it's like, all right, you got $5. Congrats.
Yeah, it was like a bunch of one-year deals. That like right. The roster last year looked like a 2015 fantasy roster of like Brandon Cooks, David Johnson, Rex Burkhead. Just so random. Meanwhile, speaking of random, John Keim of ESPN.com reporting that the Commanders just kind of randomly call quarterbacks.
I like this.
Tuesday, that the Commanders have called every single team inquiring about quarterbacks. This is an interesting approach, Paul, because what we usually hear is that these teams aren't even going to call somebody that they know they can't afford or that they're not interested in or that doesn't match up with their quote-unquote culture regime, and the Commanders are doing the exact opposite.
You may as well. I mean, what's the harm? What's the harm in cold calling? You mean, if you can handle being told to die in a fire while making cold calls, because I'm sure there's some people listening right now that that's your job, is to like just cold call someone and they're like, hey, let me tell you about I will kill your family, the hang up click, you know, like that's I feel bad for telemarketers, because obviously you signed up for this, but it's got to be pretty brutal. But what's the harm in doing it with every single team across the league? Because you might find out that there is a team that is not entirely opposed to trading their great quarterback. Obviously, it'll be an expensive price tag, but if they give you a price tag, that means it's possible. So the reason that this started, the Kansas City Chiefs, Vanessa, apparently were called by Washington. And mm-hmm. The Kansas City Star had an article that was like behind a paywall, and it was a bunch of comments. They're like, how dare the Washington Commanders call us about Patrick Mahomes? But, I mean, they should. That's doing yeah. due diligence as a general manager if you're Martin Mayhew.
Yeah, Chiefs fans get like oddly defensive of like anything involving in a way that a lot of like other teams fans don't.
Right. They like Jackson Mahomes, I hear. I'm just kidding.
They love Jackson Mahomes. Let's play a little game of are you in or are you out?
Okay.
I should have had Tyler cue up some game show music, but
how about I'll sing it? Do you want me to sing it?
Go ahead.
Die for in or out. Okay, I'll stop.
You actually do the shock jock thing like way too well.
A lot of
Mike
people accuse
McDaniel.
Me of that. I'm just a man.
There you go. Tyler, look at you.
Tyler with the assist.
Are you in or are you out?
My version was better.
McDaniel on Good Morning Football with Peter Schrager said Tua is a young quarterback with untapped potential in the NFL. Is Tua the young quarterback with the most untapped potential in the NFL? Are you in or are you out?
I am out. No, he's not. The most untapped potential is Tua Tagovailoa? No, that is not it.
Who's the young quarterback with the most untapped potential then?
Well, I think you could definitely make a case. Who's the kid from Liberty? I'm forgetting his name. And God, I'm old. I just called an NFL prospect a kid. Slap me, somebody.
Malik Willis?
Malik Willis. Thank you very much, Vanessa. Malik Willis sounds like he has got all sorts of tools that can be potentially unlocked by somebody, but he might not be ready to go right now. I think it's Trevor Lawrence too. Like,
Trevor Lawrence is my pick. I think you can make a case for Trevor Lawrence for sure.
There's something about Tua. I really thought that Tua might be Russell Wilson 2.0, size wise, the way that they throw. There's a lot of similarities there, but man, he's just very, very conservative, and I don't know if that's going to change with Mike McDaniel. You know, I feel like he might end up being another version of Jimmy Garoppolo, which isn't a bad thing, but it's not what you're looking for in your franchise quarterback.
Next question. Deshaun Watson will play this season. Are you in or are you out?
I'm in, but I guess I'm the king of wishful thinking here. I just want him gone and I want a nice draft pick. A nice draft pick in return.
You could certainly make a case that he could play, but it might just be later in the season after a possible suspension or whatnot. Jackson Mahomes is being bullied and people should be nice to him. Are you in or are you out?
I am in that he is being bullied, but I am out in that people should be nice to him. He should be continued to be bullied. Look, we all think that bullying is bad, for the most part. But sometimes you need to be bullied, right? I mean, sometimes you're doing something that's bad and your friends need to bully you into not doing that anymore.
Right.
Like, for example, for me, Paul is loud. How do we get Paul to stop being loud? Whenever his voice gets to a point of extreme volume, we turn a knob. Then Paul realizes he's being loud, gets self-conscious, and is quieter. This is what my friends do.
That is a subtle form of bullying, but I actually respect it.
I do
too. Paul will get action in Chicago on St. Patrick's Day when he goes there to visit. Are you in or are you out?
Wait a second. What kind of action are we talking about here?
Paul will get action on St. Patrick's Day in Chicago.
That's a great question. I don't know. I'm going to say out on this. I know I will try so hard and probably get so far, and in the end it probably won't matter. I'm supposedly, though, Vanessa, being set up with somebody when I'm there. So this person is attractive. This person has a cat. So we shall see.
Cat daddy.
Two cats in the night.
So that was so awkward.
I know.
So who's setting you up with this girl?
This is like my best friend is setting me up, and his girlfriend, it's his girlfriend's friend. And I don't know if they're introducing us. And it's one of those things where it might be awkward already because they have talked about us being a great match together to us. She's attractive. I don't know. We'll see.
So this is not going to be a completely blind situation because you've stalked her online.
Yes, we follow each other on the gram. True love.
All right, we will see. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Rockets legend Russell Westbrook had some interesting things to say, but was he throwing shade? That's next.
Loaded, ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, Vanessa and Gallant wrapping things up on a Friday. Rockets legend Russell Westbrook.
What a hero.
Had some interesting things to say. And Paul, you heard this and you thought that this was maybe some shade? Question mark at James Harden?
Yeah, so he said this when asked about his role with the Lakers and what was, as they always are, a very intense back and forth with Russ. We'll play the audio of this awkward exchange with a reporter in just a second, but this is audio that I could not find online. My role and what I'm doing has changed every single night, so I'm just trying to figure out that as I'm playing and be able to benefit and help my team. But my expectations are still the same. I'm not a quitter. It's not in my genes. I don't quit regardless of what the hell is going on. I'm going to fight to the end. And if it don't work, that's cool too. I can live with the results. But I'm never going to give up or give in because of a little struggle that's happening this time of the year. Now, obviously, he doesn't like the idea of being put on the bench. I don't blame him. It wasn't that long ago that he was one of the best players in basketball in terms of what he was able to do by himself. Not necessarily great for team basketball, but this is a guy athletically that's about as gifted as we've ever seen a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always liked him for this perspective. I think he's a football player trapped in a basketball player's body. Like he plays basketball. I think Russell Westbrook would be an awesome football player. That guy wants to fight people. That guy wants to hit people. He's
big, aggressive,
strong, powerful. Yeah. I'm just imagining Russell Westbrook as a 6'4" version of Cam Chancellor in the NFL, just absolutely murdering people over the middle. I think he would be great at football. But I like that he said all of this stuff, and it could be a shot at James Harden, because guess what? James Harden's expectations stopped being the same with the Rockets when all of a sudden he got hefty. And his expectations were not the same with the Nets when all of a sudden he got all hefty. He quit when his situation was not good. We have seen him now go to different situations and right away look like the James Harden of old immediately. Westbrook, for all of his faults, of which there are many, he thinks he's a very good three-point shooter. He thinks he needs the ball all the time. He thinks he needs to be playing in the fourth quarter. I will give him credit in that he gives 100% effort at all times. Like, Russell Westbrook does not half-ass it. Maybe from time to time on defense, yes, but Russell Westbrook is 100% all the time, a high-octane man. And I like him. And I like that he said this, and I hope it was a shot at James Harden.
When you look at the situation of what he thought when he came to Houston, what he thought it would be, which was utter domination with his childhood friend, like they're reunited, right? They literally grew up together. Obviously, he was disappointed. I mean, how can you not be disappointed when you and this guy that you think you heard them like on their media day when they both got here talking about starting this dynasty and all of that, and it just didn't happen. So to me, it probably was a shot at James Harden. I don't know that he would ever admit it, probably would never admit it, but it did seem like that.
Westbrook did not like what he signed up for too. Westbrook, if you read some of the breadcrumbs that were coming out of Camp Rockets, there was some talk about how Westbrook was looking at the way that Harden was treated and accommodated, and he was like, whoa, okay. Well, I didn't think it was going to be like this quite when I got here, because they were essentially doing this like genuflection at James Harden as many times as they possibly could. And I think it was a bad precedent that the Fertitta Rockets have set for themselves going forward, in that now people think that they are pushovers. They look like pushovers, and they've been pushovers with, you know, players who aren't of the same ilk, given, you know, the whole, hey, I'm going to go leave them in the middle of a game thing that happened a couple of weeks ago.
During the Super Bowl, Evan McPherson went viral for staying on the field and watching the halftime show. You saw the meme, you saw the video. Everybody was like, this is why we love kickers, blah, blah, blah. The Bengals were not thrilled about it. And Paul, when this happened, I was actually surprised that there wasn't more dialogue from former players that were like, oh yeah, his coaching staff is going to be really mad while the rest of America thinks it's cute that he didn't go in for the halftime speech. Not good. And Jay Morrison of The Athletic, who writes, does great coverage for the Bengals, said that special teams coordinator Darren Sims yesterday simply said, that's a sore subject. That's a real sore subject. Long snapper Clark Harris also stayed on the field to catch the performance, but he was smart enough to hide from the cameras. Did you think it was a big deal that Evan McPherson did this?
He's a kicker. Like, do you really care that much about it? And also, he's one of the best kickers in the NFL based off of what he did last year. I'm surprised by this. This is some petty BS, you know? I get it. You're looking for things to point at after a game, but the kicker and the long snapper staying out to watch arguably the greatest halftime show of all time, it's not a good look, but this is still a sore subject. I'm sure that he apologized. I'm sure that this isn't something where he's like, yeah, I didn't know. Someone probably told him, dude, that wasn't a good look. He probably said, yeah, it wasn't. But was that going to affect him in the Super Bowl? Was that all? Had he biffed a couple of field goals or something like that? Yeah, sure. That didn't happen.
If the Bengals had won the Super Bowl, this becomes one of the funniest narratives of the entire game.
Yeah. Wow. Look at Evan McPherson. He went to the halftime show. Right. He was probably getting like second degree high from Snoop Dogg. And here he is kicking the game-winning field goal while possibly, you know.
Meanwhile, Mahomes posting on social media that he is being bullied and that he's being disrespected. He posted what I would consider kind of a thirst trap picture of him pouting his lips and his hair all done up, kind of like my co-host Paulie G's, and said that he is tired of the media and tired of the bullying and that he is very sad about it. Meanwhile, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram published a study of the most hated people in the NFL. Surprise, surprise, Jackson Mahomes and Brittany Matthews claimed two of the top 20 spots.
And they're not even in the NFL.
They are not even in the NFL.
Wait, who else? We got to find this list, and maybe we need to dissect it next week when things start to slow down a little bit post-NFL Combine. But I'm really curious as to who else was on it. I mean, if these two make it, that's not surprising. I think that they are probably the subject of the most stories that are all negative. Has anything nice been said about either of these two ever?
This is based on total negative tweets counted in December.
Oh.
Aaron Rodgers, number one, yep. Antonio Brown number two.
Yep.
Then it goes Belichick, Odell Beckham, Deshaun Watson, Jackson Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Roger Goodell, Baker Mayfield, Dan Snyder, Cam
what did Belichick
Jerry
do?
Jones.
That's ridiculous.
The Brian Flores thing. Kirk Cousins, Josh McDaniels, Deshaun Jackson, Jalen Ramsey, Brittany Matthews, ding, 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 Richard Sherman, Ezekiel Elliott, and Robert Kraft. You know what's funny is the person that really did like a genuinely like do things wrong that we know for a fact is Robert Kraft because of the whole sex trafficking thing. And he's at the bottom of the list.
Mm, I mean, Deshaun Watson should be higher too, right?
You would think. But Aaron Rodgers during December, that's when all of the anti-vax stuff came out.
Look, with Rodgers, it was annoying, but I don't know. I hated Rodgers more for whining during the offseason about how bad the Packers were. It was like, dude, you were 13-3 last year. What are you talking about, man? You're in the NFC Championship game, and Tom Brady threw three interceptions in a row, and you lost. Like, what's wrong with you?
Patrick yeah. Mahomes, fiance, and little brother rounding out the list of the 20 most hated people in the NFL.
Don't be insufferable. And don't post it publicly if you are going to be insufferable.
And don't do a TikTok dance on Sean Taylor's memorial.
No.
In Washington Stadium.
Do it against a Russian tank.
That's a Friday. This has been Vanessa and Galan on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We are going to enjoy our weekend. And, of course, we will be back on Monday. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, guys.
So long,
the Killer
farewell.
Bees are up next. And this house just ain't no home
anytime she goes away. ESPN 97.5.